You're listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast with contributors from MLSMultiplex.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the MLS Multiplex podcast, a special edition World Series champs edition of the podcast. The Braves freaking did it on a gloomy. They did it finally after 26 long, painful years, 24 of which I was not alive to see. Josh, maybe, I don't know. But
Wait. They did it on a wonderful. You weren't alive for 24 of those 26 years?
No, I was going to say 20, and I said, wait a minute. No, I was only alive for, not alive for four of those years, right? So four of those years I was not around to see, probably thankfully, but the Braves did it November 2nd, 2021. Will forever be a day in Atlanta sports history, along with December 8th, 2018, when beloved Atlanta United won MLS Cup. But it's a busy week. It was a good week. Thanks again for tuning into the podcast. We have a lot to talk about. MLS is just a crap show right now. Lots going on. And we will get to it. But Josh, how's your week been? Where were you and what was going through your head when Dansby Swanson threw the ball to our beloved Freddie Freeman to end the baseball season and finally get a World Series?
Yeah, so Tuesday was my birthday. And so I was busy all day and, you know, getting birthday texts and well wishes and all that good stuff. And I got a couple of the you know, hey, hope the Braves get it done for you tonight. And I had a feeling. I had a feeling all day. I was like, they're gonna do it. So anytime anybody texted me about that, I was like, they're gonna get it done tonight. But I missed the beginning of it. I had to follow on my phone because I was in a music rehearsal. And so I did not get to see Jorge Soler's monster shot out of the stadium. He hit that ball out of the stadium. I did not get to see it live. I had to follow along, unfortunately, on Twitter and ESPN Gamecast, which kind of sucks. But I got home, and me and my roommate Joe, we stayed up and we watched the end of the game. So I was at home, but my favorite part was, you know, they got the final out, and then I looked down at my phone and just blown up with notifications. I had 10 or 15 different texts from people saying, you know, we did it, or, you know, happy birthday to you, you know, that kind of thing. So it was really cool. But as you guys know, and as I mentioned on last week's podcast episode, I also got to go to the game on Sunday night and experience that in person, which was crazy. Guess what I ate for dinner?
Pizza?
No.
Philly cheesesteak.
No, I'll just run down the list for you. Steak, mac and cheese, green beans, cauliflower, onion rings, chicken tenders, cornbread, nachos, sushi, and then, of course, beer, other drinks, water, things of that nature. All complimentary, part of the tickets. So I went through three or four buffet lines and just bunch of plates, ate them. It was so delicious. All the food was really good.
You must work out.
I do work out. I guess maybe that's why I was able to eat. I also knew. I was, preparing throughout the day. I had a kind of small breakfast.
Oh, you starved yourself.
I didn't starve myself. I had a little bit of a snack before leaving to go to the game. And then, of course, the team ended up losing. The highlight of it for me, personally, was getting to meet Joseph Martinez and take a picture with him. And that was really cool. I'm very proud of myself. I spoke Spanish to him. When I asked him for the picture, I told him he's my favorite player in the world. Did all that in Spanish. The only thing I said in English was thank you at the very end. So that was a pretty cool moment. Yeah, it was a good week for me. And I'm going to see a new Marvel movie tonight, so things are good.
Did you actually say things correctly to him, or did you say stuff like, can I get your aunt, instead of can I get a picture?
No. I definitely got all the words right, I'm pretty sure. I was rehearsing it in my head, so I figured he would be sitting in that section because I'd seen him on TV sitting in that section in a couple of games this postseason. But with 10 minutes to go before first pitch, he wasn't out there. And I was starting to think, okay, maybe he's not going to be here in this section. I figured he'd be at the game, but maybe not that particular spot. And whatever I was doing, I was standing up and I was on the aisle. seat. I'm like looking down at my phone. I'm looking off to one side, whatever. And all of a sudden I turn to face the middle of the stadium. And right there, like four arms length from me, is Joseph Martinez just standing there. Like I just turned back around and all of a sudden he was right there. And I mean, I was like, whoa, this dude is literally standing right next to me. Definitely a surprise. He ended up sitting on the far aisle, but it was really cool.
How many people actually went up to him?
Not that many. And what's really funny is nobody bothered him for a picture until they put him on the big board and said that he was in attendance. And then, like, all of a sudden, the woman sitting directly behind him leaned forward and got a selfie with him. And then, like, there ended up only being about 7 or 8 people that took pictures with him, including myself and the person I went to the game with. But only a couple people really bothered him after that. So he looked like he was trying to, you know, just trying to be low profile and enjoy the game. So even I was kind of hesitant to bother him for a picture, but I'm glad I did. It was cool.
That's sick. That's sick. And you posted a picture on your Instagram. Your Instagram is private though, so people can't see it. You should have tweeted one out.
I might just, we'll see.
You will tweet out an episode or a picture when you promo this episode on Twitter, where they can follow you at
Josh_Boland.
We're getting that out of the way early.
Yeah, we're getting that out of the way as early as humanly possible because, well, we never get any followers from this, which might have to do with the fact that we get very little listeners. But, Drew, I guess we should stick with the Atlanta theme. Where were you when Atlanta won?
Yeah, Tuesday was a busy day because today the Red and Black student newspaper here in Georgia put out its newspaper, and on Tuesday we put the paper together, and Missouri is at home, so we have a large section just about the home game, previewing Missouri, things like that. So that took up a lot of my time on Tuesday, so I was watching the game from the office. And I got to see Jorge Soler's home run that has still not landed. And one of my friends was across the office. She's like the photo editor, and she was a little bit delayed, I think. So no one in the office cares about the Braves except the sports desk and the photo people. Like, no one else really cares. So the sports desk were freaking out, and the photo editor's like a couple seconds behind us. So she's just watching the game chilling. And then she freaks out, and the whole office is confused. Why are these two people freaking out? But... And then we got ready for SEC championship stuff in a month, Georgia will be in the SEC championships. We got ready for that type of stuff. So I left the office about 10:15-ish, I think. And it was about the 7th, 8th inning. I got to my apartment about the 8th inning. My roommate was watching it, freaking out. I think at the time it was 6-0. And then I was at the apartment when Freddie hit his solo shot, and then Houston didn't answer back after his home run. I think that was the moment where I started to think that this might actually be happening. Will Smith came in. I think somebody got on base.
Of course. But then, it's Will Smith, baby.
Of course. It's not. Yeah, of course. It's terrible. One guy gets on base when we're up 7 runs. Then with 2 outs, I think I forgot what the second out was. But that was the moment that I think I started to realize, like, holy crap, this might actually happen. Ground ball to Dansby. This might happen?
Really? Might?
You never know. My roommate was like, "This they have to win. Like, they're up 7-0 in the 8th. Like, this has to happen." And then he Googled it and saw that scoring 7 runs in 1 inning wasn't that uncommon, actually. The Angels did it earlier this year. So he was like, oh, crap, maybe they'll do it. But, and then Dansby, he kind of flinched to second base. I said, don't throw the ball second base, Dansby. You're not going to get him. And they threw it to first and got him. And it was just like, holy crap, this actually happened. Because the last time they did it, I was not alive.
I missed it by 4 days.
And then, yeah, I was born in 99 when the Braves got absolutely shellacked by the Yankees in the playoffs. So it's been a while. But it was good. It was fun. I still don't believe it. I still don't think it's real. Like, something weird's going to happen. Like, the Astros, I don't know. Something weird's going to happen. But, no, it's exciting. I'm going to the parade tomorrow. I'm very excited about that. This will be the first championship parade I go to. I was unfortunately not able to make it to United's a couple of years ago, and they won it. But I'm super happy. It was awesome. maybe they'll do it again next year. It's weird that baseball's over, but they did it. I went to Academy, like a sporting goods store here, and right after the game, and I sat in line for about an hour just to get a Braves hoodie. But dang it, I got that hoodie. I love it. It's my baby. I have yet to take it off since they actually did it.
That is disgusting.
It's worth
it. That's freaking awesome.
I mean, I took it off to like sleep and stuff.
It's only been 2 days.
I think if
anyone
has ever seen me in public. Yeah.
Do you at least have a t-shirt on underneath?
Yes.
Okay. That's fine.
What shirt am I wearing underneath? Is it a Brave shirt? No, it's a Racing Louisville shirt. Sorry, NWSL fans in the audience.
There you go. It's still kind of disgusting that you, but whatever. Did you at least wash it before you wore it?
Oh, yes.
Okay, then
That's a rule. Shout out to my mom for instilling that rule into me when I was like 5, and I always thought she was annoying about it, but as I've gotten older, my mom's became smarter. Almost like she's been right the whole time and I was a stupid kid.
Almost like she was saying stuff that made sense.
Almost. She's a smart woman. She's got to figure it out.
Will you
Especially
now,
clothing.
Will you two now stop complaining about Atlanta sports?
No, because we should
Heck
have a
no.
Super Bowl.
Yeah, how fitting is it that we got that World Series like 2 blocks away from where we helped record the most embarrassing loss in sports history? That's not an exaggeration, by the way. I was reading an article recently on The Athletic, and it was about NASCAR and Formula One, right? Like two completely, like, even those are barely relatable in the sense that they're only about racing, and that's about where the similarities stop. And here I am reading this article about these two racing sports that I love, and this man who wrote this article throws in a freaking Super Bowl 51, 28-3, Falcons blowing the lead reference. So I'm just sitting there trying to enjoy my racing article, and I can't even escape. I can't even escape that. So it's nice that the Braves got it done in Houston this time, because maybe now that town isn't cursed for us. But the sporting is still going to be, you know, it's sports. It's heartbreaking.
I still think the Leafs blowing a 4-1 lead with 10 minutes to go in the third period against the Boston Bruins.
Oh, a score. I thought you meant a series lead for a second. I was like, that's not how that works.
No, but they have blown. They just blew a 3-1 lead to the Montreal Canadiens in the playoffs. So I think Toronto fandom is much more painful than you realize. And your loss.
Hey, y'all got your NBA championship just a couple years ago.
And back-to-back World Series in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, when I was alive.
All right, well, you saw...
I wasn't alive for the Fat Braves.
We're all tied. Both our MLS teams got MLS Cups recently, and then our baseball team got it, and your basketball team got it, so...
Yeah, you're welcome for that, by the way, because you have our former GM and a Canadian as your GM.
Yeah, he deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Not Canada, but just Alex Anthopoulos.
Freddie Freeman's kind of Canadian. He plays on Team Canada when he plays international ball.
Yeah, so you're welcome for him, too. I didn't want to include him because he's partially. I don't even know what the affiliation is, but whatever.
I just now realized Alex Anthopoulos was from Montreal. I did not know that.
Yeah, I guess. I knew he was from Canada. I didn't know where from. In Canada, but fun fact, you know that podcast I edit for, the Staff and Graph podcast?
Yes.
Alex Anthopoulos almost hit one of the hosts with his car. Told
Exciting.
A story of that last night. I know.
Was it Rachel?
No, it was Mike, the other host. If you want to hear that full story, you can go to the Staff and Graph podcast and listen to that episode, which was just released, as well as their takes on Jack Eichel, which are now out of date because he got traded at 4:30 a.m. Vegas time. But we should dive into the episode because, well, we have just mountains of things to talk about. This is also my second show of the day, by the way, so I might be tired in terms of talking. But we'll start with North Americans abroad, and this is mostly Canadians for the first time ever because Canada is better than the U.S. Ike Ugbo. IK Ugbo, I'm not fully sure how to say his name. English international, played for the U20 setup, also Nigerian eligible, chose Canada as his international team. He switched countries, citizenships. Today it was announced It is likely he'll be called up into Canada's national team tomorrow. He's a striker, if you don't know who he is. Came up in the Chelsea system. He lived in Canada for 5 years from when he was like 4 to 9, which is how he qualified. He was very wanted by Nigeria. He's currently playing for Genk. He was bought for like $3.8 million. I think Transfer Market has his value somewhere in high fours, close to $5 million range. So he's talented. He's only 23 as well, so promising young talent, big get. Speaking of Canadian strikers, Jonathan David is leading Ligue 1 in goals. Top of the league, sitting with 8 on the season. There's a bunch of players in second who are tied with 7. I don't know how we haven't talked about him very much up until now, because he has been going off, and it's good to see a Canadian or North American killing it in Liga, driving many, many goals home, both in this game, in this league, as well as around Europe. Speaking of around Europe, Theo Corbeneau, also an attacker for Canada, made his debut for Sheffield Wednesday, where he's just joined from Wolves in the Premier League. They played their match against Sunderland, and he scored a goal and an assist in the first half. So he's having a great, great start to his campaign, despite the fact that he couldn't get into games for some reason. But hopefully after that performance, he gets into more of them. Let's go to the U.S. Weston McKennie scored again for Juventus on Saturday. But Juve lost because they're trash. Keeping it in Serie A, Gianluca Busio and Tanner Tesman started together for Venezia. This was Tesman's first Serie A start. And now I will hand it off to you, gentlemen. We're not going to take a ton of time on North Americans abroad because we have a boatload of MLS news to talk about, because stuff broke just before this podcast. But what is your North Americans abroad?
I'll just go with Weston McKennie. There was a really good article that Paul Tenorio actually just published a couple hours ago on The Athletic about McKennie and his rough start with Juve this year, his suspension from the U.S. back in, what was that, the September qualifying window. And so it's just nice to see him kind of rebound from that. You're looking at me like you don't know what that is.
Wasn't it October?
Nah, it was September.
Was it?
Yeah, because it was in that the game that was at Nashville, which was on Labor Day weekend, September 5th, 2021.
That feels like it happened last week.
Really? To me, it feels like it happened 4 years ago. All this recent stuff feels like really far for me. But anyway, so good for McKennie to be scoring goals and kind of rounding into form. The U.S. is certainly going to need him in this upcoming window. He did get called up into the national team for this month's qualifiers against Jamaica and Mexico. So that'll be something interesting. Hopefully he can help lead these guys and kind of use some of that good form and with Juve into the U.S. Drew, what about you?
You call me Midian, dang it. My North American abroad moment. Yeah, I'm going to go with Busio and Herod Tesman starting together for Venezia. Tesman's first Serie A start because, yeah, exciting times. We talked a lot about that when it happened. And now to see them starting together as Tesman gets his first start is pretty phenomenal. Excited to see that. I have not been following Serie A. I have no idea where Venezia sits on the table right now. But they're going to play against some really good competition together as MLS products. And that's awesome. So I'm with that is my North American abroad moment of the week. Connor, you have a lot of options this week. It's not just Alphonso Davies running around. And Venezia is currently 16th out of 20th. So not terrible, but they're not in relegation zone yet. So Venezia update of the episode. But Connor, you have lots of options. Who is your North American abroad of the week?
My North American abroad will be Ugbo, because I think that was a huge addition for Canada. It's going to add to that young striker depth and that young striker and attacker pool for Canada, prying him away from England and Nigeria, who Nigeria apparently really wanted him, is huge, especially for a guy who we didn't really even consider as a possibility for the national team because we didn't even think he qualified. But clearly he does, and he'll hopefully have a big impact in their qualifiers in Edmonton against Mexico and Costa Rica. So, you know, we're making Mexico and Costa Rica suffer a little bit, which, you know, feels good to be on the other side of that for once. But yeah, I'm going with Ugbo. I think he's a big addition for Canada, and it's showing a positive trend among this national team and this national program, continuing to pry dual nationals away from other countries to play for Canada. And speaking of Canada, let's go to some MLS news, and we'll start with the news that broke just before this podcast, because a Canadian former goalkeeper for Canada, Pat Onstad, was hired as the new GM for Houston Dynamo, replacing Matt Jordan. The reason I bring him up, though, is because literally the second we were going to start recording, Houston announced that they'd parted ways with Tab Ramos. So Pat Onstad is going to have to search for a new manager. Probably a good thing, considering Houston suck. And, you know, they could use some better talent. But what do you guys think about Onstad being hired as the new GM? I don't know if he has any previous experience in any sort of management roles, but he is a Canadian legend and Houston legend. So do you like the hire for Houston, or do you think that they could have done with somebody who maybe has a bit more MLS experience?
Yeah, I'll start kind of focusing on the Tab Ramos side of things. His contract expires at the end of this season, and along with him parting ways with the club, there's a couple of assistant coaches that also left. Houston's kind of cleaning shop, like Connor said, might be for the best considering the struggles that Houston has experienced, especially this year. Currently sitting on the bottom of the Western Conference, I think, if I am remembering correctly. So we'll see. I think this is a bigger problem than just the guy you have on the touchline. You think about Houston, you don't really envision, you know, a ton of talent coming through that organization, but they definitely can be better than what they are. They've only made the playoffs just once since 2014, so pretty busy time for them. As far as what you got?
I just looked up Onstad's experience in management. He has quite a bit. He's been an assistant coach with a couple teams, worked in a technical director's role for Columbus. Used to work for TFC, ironically, and I had no idea, as a chief scout and manager of football partnerships. So he does have experience, which I didn't realize.
Yeah, I'm looking at his thing right now as well, and this seems like a knockout of the park hire. He was the Crew's technical director, and he won goalkeeper of the year while in Columbus as a goalkeeper. Wow, this guy is wild. He was on the team that won 2020 MLS Cup as a coach or just working with the Crew when he did that, so he knows about winning. And he also was the goalkeeper for the Houston Dynamo when they won back-to-back MLS Cup titles in 06 and 07. So this guy's been around the league. He knows how to win. He knows how to win specifically with this club. I think this club means a lot to him, so I'm pretty pumped about it. Houston fans know what winning is like after those back-to-back cups pretty long ago, though. So hopefully Pat Onstad can help them return to that, because I think young fans only know Houston being really bad. But rough stretch, Tab Ramos is gone, but exciting times, I think, ahead for Houston, and they need it because it's a good city, a good soccer city. The Dash have been dominating the soccer landscape in that city because Houston, the Dynamo, are kind of trash, but exciting times ahead. Josh, what do you think? And can we just acknowledge that this is like the first time in podcast history that news broke before we started recording? This always happens. This is the type of news that happens like as Josh is getting ready to go to the movies. He like looks at his phone and is like, oh, crap, like we missed it. So we finally got lucky. We finally got the news breaking before we started recording. But Josh, what do you think about it? I know we've only had about 20 minutes to kind of process what the heck happened here.
Yeah, well, I'll start by saying I think the Onstead hire for GM is a really good move. Like you guys were saying, I mean, he's got good experience. But the thing to me that really stands out is this is a guy who is important to the city of Houston and to their soccer history. He's really a legend for them, as Drew mentioned, being part of those back-to-back MLS Cup championships. So I think you're going to get a guy who really cares about the club, and then you've, you know, in addition, you've got a guy who's been in the league for a while now, both as a player and as an executive and even as a coach a little bit. So I think it's really, really smart for Houston. Now, as someone who was just in Houston last weekend, you know, as Drew said himself, it's a good soccer city. It really is. There are so many soccer fields all over the place. And I say that as someone who lives in the Atlanta area, where soccer is obviously extremely popular and where a downtown stadium can draw 60,000 fans on the regular. And even being in Houston, I could tell how big soccer is in that city. It is easily the most popular sport outside of probably football, because you can't mess with Friday night football in Texas. That is its own thing. But as far as soccer goes, it is very, very popular in Houston. They really need to take advantage of that. Also, I think I mentioned it on last week's podcast, but that downtown stadium, that is like prime location. It is a fantastic, like, this is the kind of location that made Chicago give up its Toyota Stadium lease out in Bridgeview. This is the same kind of move that we saw with Columbus trying to get closer to downtown. It's the reason why Austin tried to build their stadium downtown, why Cincinnati built theirs downtown. So Houston might have a fantastic spot for their stadium. Even Dallas is out in Frisco. It's not even in Fort Worth or Dallas itself. So just from being there, it's like two blocks away from Minute Maid Park, the baseball stadium. It's like another two blocks from NRG Stadium where the Texans play. So it's in a very, very good spot, and they really need to take advantage of that. And I'm expecting Onstad to do so.
Home of the 2021 World Series runner-up.
Okay, that's way. What you were going to say. It looked like it was going to be more important than that.
No, this is random. I did not realize how far away Frisco was from Dallas.
Yeah, it's really not that close.
It's like, I'm from Gainesville, which, you know, Josh, is not Atlanta whatsoever. It's about Frisco. That's what Frisco is to Dallas. It's like an hour away. It's nuts. But Connor, what do you think about it, the move, everything going on in Houston?
I think it just shows Canada's continuing influence on the Houston sports scene, as the Dash, especially the soccer scene, as the GM is now a Canadian, and the Dash feature multiple Canadians in prime positions. But in terms of Houston, I think it's a good signing. I think Pat Onstead doesn't get enough credit for his soccer career. I don't know if you read in the Wikipedia, but during his time with DC as an assistant coach, there were two injuries to the goalkeepers. So Onstead signed a contract for a duration of time and filled in, which is legendary. I think he played, if the Wikipedia is correct, three games. So shout out to him. If Houston ever need a goalie, well, they got one in the GM in the press box who can fill in, even though he's 53 or whatever. So, you know, maybe going with the goalkeeper coach is a better idea. But I think it's a good sign for Houston. What's not a good sign, however, is what happened in Montreal, because I didn't realize that this happened until Josh brought it up in the notes today. But their president and CEO, Kevin Gilmore, just resigned out of nowhere, out of the blue. He was responsible for the name change and took over in 2019. So maybe the continued fan abuse from Montreal fans played a part in it, because he did say it's been difficult family-wise and COVID-wise. But what do you guys think about this? Because there's a lot of questions remaining on my part in terms of why he would leave like the week before the playoffs are going to start, when his team is potentially destined for a playoff spot, which we'll get to.
Yeah, I don't see any problem with him leaving. The Athletic article has a statement that he mentions the last 18 months have been very challenging, which I think we all totally understand. In the past, when he took over in 2019, the team has yet to make the playoffs under his supervision. Might be kind of a weird word to put it, but like you said, Connor, this is the best shot they've ever been at to make the playoffs. And why would you not just stick it out at least 1 week or to the end of the season? If you don't make the playoffs, you call it quits, get ready for the offseason. Montreal goes to the offseason. Pretty good season, I think, given everything that they've gone through with coming back to Canada. If they just the fact that they're in this position right now, I think speaks a lot to the future of that club. But why would you not wait until the fate of the team goes through? If this weekend doesn't bounce their way and they're out of the postseason, just wait until then. If they do make a playoff run, cool. But you just hang around for the postseason run after that's done, which I know if they do make the playoffs, I don't think they'll be in there very long. But I don't understand the timing of right now, which is confusing. And who knows? Maybe Montreal. This seems very out of the blue. Like, I think if you were planning to do this, no one would say, I'm going to resign the week before, a couple days before the end of the regular season. Because if he waits 3 days, 3 to 4 days, then he makes it through the regular season. So I don't really get the timing at all. It's weird timing. Understandably why he's doing it, given having made the playoffs, pandemic, everything's been weird for him. But I'm right there with you. I don't understand the timing of right now, of why you would do it right now. Seems a little sus on my end.
Yeah, it makes me think there's something else going on. But Josh, what are your thoughts on Gilmore pretty abruptly leaving the week before the playoffs are going to start?
I mean, I agree the timing is weird, but I don't think it really has much effect on the team or the organization, really. You know, it's not really going to, at least it's not going to affect the playoffs coming up. At least I would hope not, since it's happening now, since he's resigning now. To me, the bigger thing is just that it's just interesting to me that the most notable thing he did in his tenure was change the name of the club, which wasn't very popular with the fans, with the league. And so it's just interesting to me that that's like the biggest thing he did, and now he's gone. I wonder if that had something to do with it, because, you know, the whole point was for them to be more global, quote unquote. And I don't know that Montreal's really done that, and I don't see that happening for them anytime soon. So it's just a really, it's just a weird situation overall for me. But I don't know. It's just Montreal. It's not a big deal. They'll, you know, no offense, but I mean, they're just going to be Montreal. Like, nothing's going to change for this club in the meantime. I mean, they could get a new president, CEO that, you know, knocks it out of the park in his position, and that would be great. Or they'll just continue being, you know, sort of average. So I guess we'll find out.
Why don't we go from one terrible rebrand to a, we'll see, rebrand. The New England Revolution announced their
terrible rebrand.
No, it's not. It's good.
Terrible.
Well, okay. Quickly, New England released a new crest today. They're getting rid of the classic only original 96 crest that was left in the league that looked like it was designed with a crayon. I guess we'll start with Drew because he has some strong opinions and strong feelings on this.
My boyhood club disappointed me. I have to get a new jersey now. What the heck?
Your boyhood club, whose jersey you on it right now aren't wearing.
Yeah, what's going on, man?
The Braves in the World Series.
For the first time in a long time.
You couldn't wear the jersey underneath?
They disappointed me. I'm wearing a Racing Louisville shirt underneath it. It's fine. I stick with soccer. But this stupid, horrendous, horrible logo change is the logo. I've heard a lot of people say it looks like it was drawn with crayon, which I didn't.
Yeah, they call it the crayon flag. That's its nickname.
Until I saw it on Twitter. And I said, oh, crap, it really does look like it was drawn with crayon. But it's a cool nod to the 94 World Cup, which is the only reason this league even exists in the first place, because to have a World Cup, FIFA requires you to have a domestic league. So the United States said, hey, if you give us the World Cup, we'll start a league. World Cup 94, 2 years later, MLS shows up. And the Revolution, which is a phenomenal name, given the history of Boston and everything the city does, say pretty original to the World Cup US 94 logo and went with the flag idea. So it's kind of a nod to historic roots. and I think it was awesome. And it's the last one. It's so cool. Honestly, I just think everything was cooler in the 90s. Like, all the team logos, I think, were better. And I thought it was so cool. It was a nod to 94. It was something that, you know, if it stuck, it would always be a, this is the history of our logo. Because that's a team, that crest, that logo is, like, especially unique to the Revolution. Because every other logo, right, the Atlanta United's logo is, like, a circle with an A on it. You know, whatever, that's cool. But the Revs have this cool thing that they're looking back to the founding of the league, this super historic moment in soccer history in North America, and they went with this thing that I haven't even looked at it super close, but it kind of looks like a flower. It's like a weird, there's like a weird sash on it. I'm trying to pull up the new one right now to get a better look at it. They haven't even changed their profile picture on Twitter. So the social media person, our best friend, the Revolution social media manager, which called out Josh, understands the new logo is worse, and they haven't changed it yet.
No, they straight up said it's not going to, they're not going to switch over their logos until after the playoffs end, Drew.
It reminds me of, this looks like a rose. There's an R and there's all this red going on. I'm thinking of like the Rose City Riveters in Portland. I'm not thinking of the best team in MLS, the New England Revolution.
It looks quite similar to Queens Park Rangers logo. Not identical.
Lawsuit, get it out of there. Queens Park Rangers, I need you.
No lawsuit potential, but it's kind of similar. It's like a cross between both of the Rangers soccer team's logo in terms of Queens Park and Glasgow is sort of how I saw it.
The color scheme of Glasgow and the look of Queens Park.
Exactly. Josh, you're a bit more in favor.
Gross.
You're a bit more in favor of the logo than diehard New England fan, Mr. Hubbard. So what do you think of the rebrand, and do you why do you like it?
I just like the crest because while I do agree with Drew that it's lame, that it's circular, like everything else has become these days in MLS, like all the crests kind of are starting to melt together. I do like how it's still original. Like, there just isn't another crest that really looks like this in the league. So to me, that's one of my favorite parts. I understand the nostalgia and the sentiment with the crayon flag and its importance with the 94 World Cup and it being one of the last, the last original MLS crest. But at the same time, I mean, 26 years is a long time. 25 years is a long time, however long it's been. I can attest to that. And it's okay if there's change. Like, change is okay. Now, if you are like Columbus and you're going up to your third crest now ever, and you tried to take away the original name and you made it this ugly looking flag thing, then I can understand being upset about that. Or if you're Chicago and you're taking this, you know, again, an original crest and you're making it a million times worse by making this ugly two-colored oval, then I can understand the outrage. But this is objectively a cool-looking crest. Again, a little disappointing that it's... I'm of the opinion that you should update crests and not necessarily change them all the way. So if we had gotten a more modern-looking, like, Revs flag, I would have liked that more, I think. If we had gotten an updated Chicago crest or an updated Columbus crest that was a little more modern looking but was still very similar, then I would appreciate that. But at the end of the day, this is not the worst rebrand there is. It's not even close. There have been, really, like, all the recent rebrands have been way worse than this one. So props to New England. Also, their secondary logos that they have tied into this rebrand are really cool. So to me, it's a good... it's a good rebrand, if there can be one.
I sit somewhere in between you two. What I really like is I like the middle of the new badge. I think that would make a really cool, like, arm patch sort of thing, or like T-shirt logo, potentially. I think the outside circle looks like a, oh, wait, we forgot to include the name. Crap. Let's do this very quickly in Photoshop. So... I think it could be a bit better, but as you said, Josh, there are monstrously worse rebrands. And if you don't like old logos, I suggest you don't look at how the Montreal Canadiens logo has changed over time, because it hasn't. But
those are so cool, though.
Hey, real quick.
Old logos are sick. The most iconic franchises in the world have the same. The New York Yankees have, like, never changed. And everyone knows who the Yankees are. Well, they know what that stupid NY looks like.
That's because baseball is rooted in tradition, which is actually one of the flaws of
the league. MLS has to build that.
That's a different
MLS
thing.
MLS has to quit this rebranding and jersey changing.
For you to
nonsense.
Say that the old MLS logos are cool is just wrong. I saw all of them today, like the original 96 ones, and they were ugly. Most of them were terrible.
The Dallas Burn one, is the color scheme is terrible. The Dallas Burn is awesome.
Well, if the color,
green literally looks like vomit.
Yeah, exactly. If the color scheme is bad, it's bad. That's
put
part of the crest.
That blue and red on that Dallas Burn logo, and you got it. That's peak.
Here's the issue with MLS. You get nostalgia in leagues like the Premier League and La Liga and Bundesliga potentially too, or and Wesso Liga, but you know, you get the nostalgia in those leagues. MLS, in order to be successful on the world stage, needs to be the new exciting young hip league if they really want to grow, I think is the best way of putting it. Attracting those world stars by being that young, hip, new, you can earn actual money, or not actual money, you can earn lots of money here, not just in your salary, but we have brands worth billions of dollars who will pay you millions of dollars. But yeah, I think I understand where both of you are coming from. I think we should transition from, okay, go ahead.
Quick question. Which logo do you like better, the old MLS league logo or the new one?
The new one, easy.
Oh, the new one. The new
one. Oh, you guys suck. Just keep talking. I hate both of you so much.
The old one sucks. It's so bad.
It's so cool.
It's so bad.
It's awesome. I love it. I have a shirt with just that logo on it. I love it.
That is not something you openly admit.
Also, the Kansas City Wizards logo is fresh as heck.
We don't talk about the Kansas City Wizards with me. You weren't around for when this happened. They were the first, I think, opponents against TFC, and they beat them. Let's talk about from one rebrand to a team that re-rebranded and should probably rework their front office, because they told seven of their players, six of them being regular starters, that their contracts were either not being renewed or they were being released. The Chicago Fire made a decision. How was that allowed is my single question, because I feel like that creates a lot of issues in terms of fair play and competitiveness rules.
Nah, this whole thing has been blown up out of proportion. I blame Taylor Twellman for this. He made this sound like so much bigger a deal than it actually is.
Yes,
like, there's,
he did.
There's nothing out of the ordinary with this. So what, they told their players
early? Yes, there is.
What's weird about this?
Nope, you don't tell your players that they're gone before the season starts. Or ends, sorry.
This is common practice.
No.
I think it's kind of nice.
Yeah, then these dudes
it's
can
good.
Go
I mean,
on vacation early. They're
okay.
Still going to get paid.
They can look at apartment leases for other cities.
The front office of Chicago put out a statement saying, we did this to allow these players to find new teams.
Yes, it is nice. You can still wait 7 days before the season ends, and then tell them.
It's not their fault Taylor Twellman decided to break this on in the middle of a national broadcast on a Wednesday
night. Yes, it is.
Why is it their fault?
Because you don't tell the players.
No, this is common practice.
It's not.
To be fair, we are at the beginning of a month, so when you're talking about housing leases, if you tell
you
them before the lease...
You are not looking at housing leases before you have a contract.
These players have to find out where to live. If you do it before the end of the month, that's saying the month is like everything in apartment housing world.
Yes, but
you tell them before then, they can get out of their lease, they can talk to some people, get some things done by the end of the month, go to Cincinnati, lose some more, and just keep going.
Okay, first of all, they're not playing Cincinnati. Second of all,
no, the players will go to Cincinnati and lose some more. That's what they'll do.
I get it. I find it surprising that both of you are okay with this. I think you should have to wait, personally.
I mean, how would you enforce that? Because then you could just like have meetings with your players and say, hey, we're cutting you at the end of the season.
I don't think you should be allowed to do that, though.
Okay.
Like, how are you?
It doesn't bother me.
You're not allowed to tamper, but how do they keep track of that?
Yeah, but tampering is different than this.
How? That's like tampering.
How is this like tampering?
It's basically like throwing a match.
Because they have no purpose.
Well, no,
winning this match means nothing to them.
Interim coach, Frank Klopas, already told them that he's going to play a young lineup this weekend in their last game, the game that means nothing.
Yes, okay, but if you do play them, they are not going to play hard. They are going to play very, very passive because they don't want to get injured.
Yeah, that's why it's perfect that they're not playing.
Yes. Okay. Oh, my God.
Right? I mean,
I don't think this... Go ahead.
I mean, isn't that it? Like, you don't make these players play because they're not on your team anymore. They won't be on your team anymore. It's like giving them the option to play if they want to. What are they going to say? They're going to say, no, we don't want to play because they've been on this terrible team for 3 years. It's just speeding up a process that was already going to happen. And nothing gets affected
by this.
Yes, but
I don't think you should be allowed to do it with a game left. I think you should have to wait until the Monday after decision day.
That's,
in the event that they do play.
That's fine and all. The only thing is it becomes an issue with the teams that make it all the way to MLS Cup. And we've seen this in the past few years where you win MLS Cup and then you have to make roster announcements the very next day, which they do. And then all of a sudden these players that just won MLS Cup, they're gone. They're not even on that team anymore. I feel like this is similar in that the season is ending. And while, yes, they could wait a week, if you're going to be sitting all of those players anyway, which they said they would, why not go ahead and tell them? Why not go ahead and say, hey, since you're not playing this weekend, also, by the way, you're not coming back next year.
What? Okay, they're not playing. They're still bringing the players to the game.
Yeah, they are, but they're not playing.
They could play.
If they want to.
But they
probably
won't.
Have that conversation where, hey, if you want to be a sub, would you want to? Again, that's kind of, why would you at this point?
I don't know. I just don't think it should be allowed. I think Taylor Twellman did blow it a bit out of proportion.
Yeah, he made it sound like these players are like revolting. You know, the reason why they're not going to go play is because they got told, you know, they're not coming back, which is literally part of the business.
Yes, I think they should have waited. But the other news in this is that Franco Calvo will not be playing. He is being released to Costa Rica early because why would he go if he's not going to get a contract? And he has to play World Cup qualifiers. That one, fine. That's understandable. The other guys, I don't get it. But, you know, it is what it is. Let's shift to less than positive news that is very complicated, very long, has been going on for quite a long time and really hasn't been reported on because the club has refused to say anything. And if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about the Vancouver Whitecaps investigation. Have both of you seen this?
Yes, haven't. Like you said, they kind of, I don't think it's been talked about enough. They kind of have kept it under wraps a little bit, but it found its way out.
My question is this connected to the abuse of the girls from the Canada women's national team program that was there. Is this in connection to that? Or is this a separate abuse scandal?
It is related to, I'm not sure if it's related to that, but the issue is a coach with their women's team at the time, abused one of the players or some players.
Okay. This sounds like it's connected then. I don't want to say for sure if it is or isn't since Vancouver hasn't been completely transparent with this. Like they put some employees on leave, but they haven't even, you know, we don't know who those employees are. I mean, all I have to say about it is obviously it's extremely disappointing. I remember reading the article about those women that were abused while I think it was they were being housed in Vancouver through the Whitecaps organization. They weren't necessarily players for the organization. It was more through the national team and such. But I remember reading that article. It was just a couple years ago that those articles were published, and it was just super, super frustrating, really sad, really disappointing. And it's also been disappointing that it's taken so long for, I guess, Vancouver to do something about this, for MLS to step in and do something about this, because again, this has been an issue for a couple years now, right? Even if it's not the exact same players involved or whatever the case may be. So it's also disappointing that it's taken so long, but I'm glad that something is finally being done about it.
So I just quickly read a CBC article because the coach involved, Hubert Busby Jr., coached the Jamaican women's team currently, and he's been suspended by Jamaica, obviously, as they undergo the investigation. He's accused of, and it was claimed in an interview with a British publication, The Guardian, that Busby sexually coerced and assaulted Mallory Enoch, E-N-O-C-H, while recruiting her to the Whitecaps in 2010 and 2011, when he was the head coach of Vancouver's women's team. MLS has recently announced an investigation into this topic, mostly, I think, heavily influenced by the Chicago Blackhawks incident, which, if you're not familiar with, one of the Chicago Blackhawks video coaches during their 2010 Stanley Cup run sexually assaulted one of their players. It's an unbelievably brutal situation. He then did it again to another person. John Doe 2 is how he's going by. It was a 16-year-old. He was charged, spent 9 months in jail. They just crossed his name off the Stanley Cup because this incident was embarrassing. Stan Bowman, who was the GM at the time, has resigned from his job with Chicago. You should read up this on the story if you haven't. It's incredibly eye-opening, highlights many issues in hockey. But back to the Vancouver Whitecaps investigation. MLS has announced that there will be an independent investigation, which is the most important aspect of this, specifically related to Vancouver's handling of the allegations made against the coach. Finally, they took accountability. They've really been trying to keep this quiet and sort of swept under the rug for a long time and sort of been ignoring media pressure and media conversations. And it really hadn't picked up any sort of steam, as both Josh and Drew made well aware if they've only heard it recently. I'd been a little bit more aware of it for probably a year or so-ish, I'm guessing, just because I follow quite a few Vancouver Whitecaps people on Twitter. But it's been very quiet on that regard. The club has put all employees who may have been involved on leave until the investigation has been completed. That investigation is being headed up by Ruben Tomlinson LLP, which is a law firm. To quote the statement released by MLS PR today on Instagram, "The investigation will consider the club's internal processes and overall culture at the time of the allegations, including what steps it took in response to the allegations. The review will also consider the club's current policies and procedures and provide any recommendations on preventative measures to ensure that all players and staff within the Whitecaps organization work in a safe environment, free of all forms of harassment and fear of retaliation." Vancouver and MLS have also committed to the process and have pledged full cooperation in this investigation, and all findings will be publicly released. That's sort of the lowdown on everything that's sort of happened up until this point. We will see what the result of the investigation is. I expect there to be a fallout from this. It's a brutal situation. It highlights a problem in sports that's continued to show itself in recent months since Brad Aldrich, who is the video coach, since that sort of situation came to light, thanks to Rick Westhead, his reporting, who works for TSN Sports, which if you don't follow Rick, follow him. He's an unbelievable investigative reporter in the sports world. He and Katie Strang, who also does work in hockey reporting, investigative journalism, both great follows. But yeah, we'll sort of have to wait and see what transpires, what happens in this situation. Do either of you have any sort of thoughts on the investigation finally being launched, the entire situation, Josh, you sort of already gave your opinion, but Drew, do you have anything?
I mean, I think it's just, you know, this has been unfortunately a trend, I think, recently with the NWSL and everything that happened with that, and now with the Whitecaps, something that is just a problem that we have in the game, in the women's game, in the men's game, just this stuff happening, it's not okay. And then I think when you go in investigations, it eventually comes out that this unfortunately has been happening for years and years and years. So it's something in the game, in the world, and we specifically see it, unfortunately, a lot recently in North America, across leagues, the NWSL and now MLS. So it's something that is in soccer that needs to get out of soccer. Those people need to get out of the leagues. And, yeah, I mean, it's tough as a fan to see this stuff happening, because at the end of the day, we just want to watch soccer. But unfortunately, there are things that in organizations that really need to be taken care of, and that means getting rid of some people that don't need to be in the game. So we've seen way too much of this, I think, recently across leagues. And, yeah, like Connor said, I mean, we'll see what happens with the investigation, because leagues and teams are starting to come out about it. So we'll see what happens. Super disappointing, though, that this is happening again.
What I also want to highlight, because I think this is very important, Vancouver conducted its own investigation at the time. And when the investigation was concluded, they dismissed Busby, and players were asked not to speak of the situation publicly as well. So I assume MLS will look pretty heavily into that and what Vancouver's role was into this entire situation. But yeah, we will take a quick break now before diving into the playoff races in MLS, because decision day is this weekend. And well, it's a tight, tight race in both conferences, but we'll be right back.
And we are back to talk some playoff races, decision day, as the MLS regular season comes to a close. Both conferences are in pretty crazy spots. A lot of teams have already clinched, a lot of teams have already been eliminated, and a lot of teams are still waiting to see if they still have a shot to make the playoffs. Some teams have better shots than others, and we will talk about all of that. And we are going to start in the Eastern Conference. We're going to start in this little hodgepodge of nonsense that they got going on with Atlanta United, Orlando City, New York Red Bulls, Club de Foot, Montreal, which we talked a lot about, are all within 2 points of each other. So this is going to be wild, especially because Orlando and Montreal play each other. So someone's going to have to drop points in that situation. That's going to help some guys, benefit some teams, hurts other teams, and we'll see how that goes. Then the Red Bulls play Nashville. Nashville is competing for a second seed, so Nashville has stuff to play for. Red Bulls fighting for their playoff lives. Atlanta United plays Cincy, so I don't know who put this in the doc, but they said Atlanta United is probably in. I know it's not Josh, so Connor.
Yep.
Yep, if anyone's going to do it, it'll be Atlanta United. So Atlanta United plays Cincinnati, Red Bulls play Nashville, Orlando and Montreal play each other. Connor, out of these, how many, well, we have four teams that are kind of in this nonsense together. We won't talk about Nashville too much because Nashville is clinched. They're just kind of standing in the Red Bulls' way right now. Cincinnati is just a soccer team that unfortunately plays in Major League Soccer, and we have to watch them every now and then. But Red Bulls, Orlando, and Atlanta, three teams, and Montreal, I'm stupid. Out of those teams that are fighting for spots, who do you have the most confidence in right now that they will make the playoffs?
Atlanta, without a doubt. They're playing Cincinnati. They're 2 points up on Montreal, a point up on the Red Bulls. I'd argue almost a guaranteed win against Cincinnati, who have 20 points on the season. 20 points. To put that into perspective, Houston, who is last in the West, have 30. That is so bad. TFC, who are second last, have 28. If you don't win this game, you don't deserve to win to make the playoffs. If you don't get points in this game, you don't deserve to make the playoffs. This is as close as a sure thing for you to make the playoffs as you can possibly get. So much would have to go wrong for you not to make the playoffs. So that's my favorite in the East. Do you want me to do the West the same, or we'll do West later? My least favorite to make the playoffs, it's got to be Red Bulls. I think Nashville are actually going to go for it because they do need to win. They're tied on points with Philadelphia. So if they can get a result out of this game, it'll really put Red Bulls in a tough spot. And I think Montreal is a very good shot of getting points against Orlando. So I'd say Red Bulls are in the toughest spot, Atlanta in the best spot. Josh, you just won a championship in another sport. Will you finally show faith in one of your sports teams?
It would take a miracle for Atlanta to not make the playoffs. So yes, they are pretty much guaranteed. But in terms of confidence and how I'm feeling about like these four teams, Red Bulls, Montreal, Orlando, Atlanta, I'm feeling pretty good about Montreal. I remember it was a few weeks ago that I said Orlando would miss the playoffs. That is still a possibility. I think it's going to happen to where they miss the playoffs. I think Red Bulls are actually going to beat Nashville on Sunday. Not for lack of trying on Nashville's part or anything, but I just think that Red Bulls' press and their good run of form recently is going to be enough for them to squeeze out a win on the road against Nashville. I also think Montreal is going to beat Orlando because they're the home team, and I think that's a really big advantage for the Foot and a really big disadvantage for Orlando having to go travel north, play in the cold most likely. I would say DC and Columbus are pretty much out of it, so we don't really need to talk about them or anything. But yeah, I have a feeling that Montreal is going to beat Orlando and Red Bull are going to... You know what? Actually, Red Bull just need a draw if Orlando is going to lose, because then Red Bulls would get in with that wins tiebreaker or the goal differential tiebreaker, whichever one is next. So... that's going to be my prediction. I'm going to predict that Red Bulls get a result against Nashville, either a draw or a win, and I predict that Montreal beat Orlando to sneak in and get that fifth spot in the playoffs. I'd probably be the sixth spot at that point since Red Bull...
You say it's going to be cold? You say it's going to be cold in Montreal? It's not. It's a high of 11 or 12.
That means nothing to me.
Celsius.
11 degrees is freezing. Okay, that's 20 degrees below freezing.
It's like 50-ish, something like that, right?
Really?
I'm guessing double it at 40 is what I've always heard.
It is
51.8.
It is colder. Bang. It is colder here in Georgia right now than it is.
It is
going
freezing
to be in Montreal.
I was walking to class. I was so freaking
cold.
Yeah,
it's pretty. It's pretty
honestly
brutal right now.
I am shocked it's that warm. It should not be that warm. Today it was a high of 7 Celsius. So. Much colder.
Is that like 34? It's about freezing, almost. About 40. Either way.
40-ish.
I still think that Montreal has the advantage of being home, although maybe the cold weather will not end up being a factor. But I stand by my prediction. Red Bulls in. Orlando out.
Drew, what do you think?
I think Josh is right about the Red Bull Nashville thing because Red Bull has kept teams pretty at bay as far as scoring goals go. I think when you look at their last results, shout out Atlanta, shout out Montreal, allowed one to DC, that's pretty embarrassing. Shout out NYCFC. So a team can defend, and when you do that against a Nashville team who can also defend but has been on a rough stretch as far as scoring goes. I know they had that weird 6-goal explosion against Cincinnati, but shut out by Philadelphia. Shut out by DC, shut out by NYCFC, shut out by Chicago. So I think that's going to be a pretty boring game, but I think Red Bulls, on like Josh said, that good run of form, is going to take just one moment of brilliance that they get a goal. I'm going to say a 1-0 win for the Red Bulls. I think the Red Bulls are going to go in. As far as Montreal or Orlando goes, you know, I can't just totally agree with Josh. I'm going to say Montreal makes it. I'm going to say Montreal beats Orlando just because this league makes no sense whatsoever. Montreal on a good run of form, just beat Houston, some confidence boosting for them. So I'm going to say Montreal makes it, and Red Bulls make it, and Atlanta makes it with that Cincinnati win. So least confident in Orlando, I think they will not make it, which would be super disappointing for them given what they were at the beginning of the season, the expectations they had after making a run to the MLS's back final. But I don't think Orlando City is going to make the playoffs. But I'm going to say the Red Bulls in Montreal will make it. And just as things are crazy on the East, they are crazy as well on the West. Ahead of decision day, we have a lot going on here. We have Vancouver, who is still miraculously making this run in sixth place, only 3 points ahead of RSL with 45, who is outside of the playoff spot, the Galaxy with 47, Minnesota with 48. Between ninth and fifth is 3 points. LAFC sits in ninth with 45, RSL with 45, Galaxy with 47, Vancouver and Minnesota with 48. Portland is in fourth. I think they already clinched a spot. So about between fifth through ninth, it's a crapshoot. There are one, two, five teams competing for three playoff spots. Josh, out of these teams that could potentially do it, Vancouver plays Minnesota. They only need a point to get in. No, Vancouver and Minnesota only need a point to get in. The Galaxy plays Minnesota. RSL plays SKC. Vancouver's got a tough one with Seattle, and LAFC plays Colorado. We know how good the Rapids have been this season. Out of these teams in the West, who's making it? And who is going to miss out on the playoffs this year?
Yeah, so I am feeling nowhere near as confident about the Western Conference and the possible outcomes for this weekend. Nowhere near as confident as I'm feeling about the East. Honestly, I was expecting RSL to get in, but they have not looked good their last couple games. And they got to play Sporting Kansas. I mean, man, these four games right here, these are... This is tough because Colorado and Seattle and Sporting KC, I mean, they don't have anything to play for in terms of making the playoffs, but they all want that top. I'm getting there, but they all want to get that top seed because you want that bye week, and it's very much in play for all three of them. So, gosh, it is going to suck having to watch four games at once on Sunday, isn't it? man.
What time do the Falcons play on Sunday?
Irrelevant.
I'm a psycho, and I love hurting myself. I have to watch them play.
Boy, you know what? My team just got a World Series. Now it's time to suffer on Sundays.
Oh, we play New Orleans. Have to watch it. Birds by a million.
we're gonna get destroyed by Taysom Hill. It's going to suck.
Yep.
Wrong football, seen this guys. Movie before. Wrong football.
The right football.
So I'm just going to go ahead and stick with my initial prediction from a couple weeks ago. I'm going to say that LAFC gets in, which is stupid. I'm going to say that the Galaxy beat Minnesota. And so that's what it's going to be for me. It's going to be LAFC wins over Colorado. They get to 48 points, therefore pulling level with Minnesota. However, LAFC will have the goal differential tiebreaker at the time, because they have the same amount of wins. Vancouver, who'd we say they're playing? Sporting Kansas City? No, I'm sorry. Seattle. Seattle's struggling right now. I think Vancouver and Seattle will draw, and therefore Vancouver will still get into the playoffs by virtue of that draw. But yeah, I still think Minnesota United are not going to make the playoffs, and I think that LAFC are going to sneak in.
Interesting. LAFC is a hot take.
Yeah, you know me. If I'm making a take, I got to stick by it until it literally is wrong.
That is a hot take. It is tough because you look in our next discussions in terms of who wins the West, because it's very close up top there too. But I think Vancouver get in for sure. I'm very confident in Vancouver. I think they've been in very, very good form, despite drawing to LAFC, like, yesterday, on Wednesday. 2 days ago?
Tuesday.
I tried.
Yeah, that was the funniest thing, is because Vancouver got that equalizer, and it was, like, the only non Braves/World Series tweet that showed up on my timeline in that like 3 hour span. And I was like, oh yeah, there's soccer tonight.
Yeah, I was watching that actually. Now that I think about it, I was watching that in the commercial breaks while watching the World Series. So I'm going with Vancouver, and I'm going to go with, man, I hate going against Greg Vanney. And they just, LA Galaxy just won too. Oh, that's so tough. It is so tough. Who did LA Galaxy, or Galaxy drew against Seattle. That was it. Minnesota just beat Sporting KC. Oh. I'm going with Minnesota, Vancouver, and I think one more, right? I think I need one more. Yes, I need one more.
LAFC or RSL?
I think it's RSL.
Wow. You think they're going to get a result against Sporting Kansas City? They got to get the win.
No, I don't think they're going to get anything. I think LAFC is going to lose. Wait, what did I say? I'm confusing myself. You said, no, I'm going LA Galaxy. What am I saying?
Okay, so I'm you're not going LA Galaxy. Against
Fanny. No. I'm saying Minnesota will win. I think LA Galaxy will lose, but I also think LAFC and RSL will lose or get a point.
So you think that both Galaxy and Minnesota will make it into the playoffs is what you're saying?
Yes.
Gotcha. So the playoffs as
made that way too complicated. I made it way too complicated. I don't know. I think LAFC are going to struggle against Colorado. Colorado are really playing for it. And RSL are playing Sporting KC, who've been on a really good run of form, especially with, as we mentioned last week, the real Scottish Messi, Johnny Russell. But let's go to the who will win the West, speaking of those three teams, Sporting KC, Seattle, and Colorado. Seattle are currently on top with 59 points. Colorado and SKC are tied in second at 58. Who wins, Drew? Who comes out on top?
I have to say SKC. I have to. Yeah. No one wants to be the best team in the Western Conference. They're all just shenanigans. We're all just toys in the New England Revolution's game. It's all fake. No one's the best team in the Western Conference. Colorado's the best team in the Western Conference, but I'll say SKC to stick with the brand. They're going to come out on top.
Josh, what about you? Who comes out of the West up top?
What did I say? I said LAFC was going to win, which means it can't be Colorado. I said Vancouver and Seattle would draw, which means, dang it, can't be,
yes. Can't be Seattle. Yes. Bow.
All right, so I think I have to say that Sporting Kansas City will be the first seed, but I stand by that they're not the best team in the West, just because there is no best team in the West. It's impossible. Also want to point out that SKC were the top seed last year, and they looked terrible in both of their playoff games and got subsequently eliminated. So I think we are going to see a repeat of that.
I'm going to go hot takey, and I'm going to say Colorado. I think they get a win against LAFC. I think RSL draws against Sporting KC. And I think Seattle either draws or loses to Vancouver. That is my hot take. Colorado, top of the West. Team that's very snuck under the radar in all season in terms of how well they've done. I think Mark Anthony Kay and Acosta, almost said Luciano Acosta, is it Acosta?
Kellen Acosta.
Yeah, Kellen Acosta. Thank you. I think those two will drive them home. But we will have to wait and see. We will have to wait and see. What we also have to wait and see is what your goals of the week were. All of us, apart from Mr. Boland, were in the East. So Mr. Boland, considering we were talking about the Western Conference, why don't you go first?
Yeah, my goal of the week this week was teenager from San Jose, Cade Cowell. That game was wild, very wide open between RSL and San Jose. There was a really good clip that Matt Doyle shared of, I think it was Ochoa for RSL, throwing the ball out into midfield, and immediately RSL had a 3-on-2 advantage in midfield, running towards goal, sprinting towards goal. It was crazy. So when I saw the Cade Cowell goal, I was like, this does not surprise me at all with how wide open everything was. But really good effort from him. He is so fast with the ball. And so he sprinted, had some good fancy footwork in the penalty box, and then put the ball away. Really good finish. So that was my goal of the week, Cade Cowell.
Drew, what was your goal of the week?
I just watched it before I put it in the doc, but I'm thinking of forgetting exactly how it happened. But Paul Ariola's goal versus Columbus, I think someone played him over the top, and he one-timed it. Yeah, okay, it's coming back to me now. It was a good goal. It was the first goal of the game against Columbus, but then DC promptly blew that 1-0 lead. I think they lost 3-1. But Paul Ariola got the scoring open. It was a good goal. That was my goal of the week. But his goal was canceled out by another good goal in that game that actually did win the game, which leads us to Connor. What was your goal of the week?
My goal of the week was the best goal of the week. Lucas Zelarayan's banger from outside the box. Back-to-back weeks that he's done that. So he's killing it. But I want to give a special shout-out to a CPL player, Omar Brown, former Montreal at the time. Or was it at the time? No, CF Montreal player. Also played for Independiente against TFC when they lost in the Champions League. Scored an absolute banger of a goal in their Champions League match, which qualified Forge for Champions League. So they'll be playing in CONCACAF Champions League in the winter. We'll see whether or not they can get away any sort of result in Champions League. I highly doubt it, but I wanted to give a shout out to them because CPL are making moves and, you know, good for them. But let's go to our players of the week. And speaking of Lucas Zelarayan, Mr. Boland, who is your player of the week?
Yep, that's it. Connor just said it. Lucas Zelarayan, he's my player of the week. Really good performance for Columbus in, I mean, I guess what was a must-win game for them. Trying to still make the playoffs, which they are mathematically alive somehow still. That's MLS for you. Yeah, he had that excellent goal, and I believe he also had an assist. I'm trying to pull it up right now. Might have had another goal. I can't remember the... Yeah, he had two goals. He had that penalty as well earlier in the game. So, yeah, really big game from Zelarayan to help Columbus get the win and keep them alive in the playoffs.
All right, Drew, who is your player of the week?
I went with Sebastian Blanco. He scored two goals against RSL. And I want to say that might have been the game that officially clinched a playoff spot for Portland. I'm not sure. Maybe between that and some other stuff happening, but I'm pretty sure Portland clinched not too long ago. But he scored two goals in Portland's 3-2-1 win over RSL. He scored in the 17th and 45th minute before RSL got one back in the 88th. So I want Sebastian Blanco. I'm happy to see him tearing it up in the league as always. So he scored two goals. He got my player of the week. And now you've talked a lot about games. That's going to come up this weekend. This is a big weekend. Why are you giving me that
look?
You're
just going to forget me?
Did you not?
No.
You didn't say yours already?
No.
Oh, wow, I didn't. Connor, who is your player of the week?
God, you have a tendency to do that. My player of the week was Josh's goal of the week, Cade Cowell. He's a guy who's sort of gone under the radar, had a bit of a tough stretch since his opening season. Great results. He scored a goal and got an assist on their match on October 30th. So wanted to give him a shout out because he sort of struggled throughout the season and he had a very good performance on their game over the weekend. But as Drew was trying to do, we will now go to our games to watch. And Drew, let's get you out of the way so that you don't forget Josh. Aww. Or you want to go last?
No, I'll go. I'll start us off.
All right, go ahead.
My game to watch is the Galaxy versus Minnesota. Obviously, this weekend is full of really good games with playoff potential, but I went with Galaxy Minnesota because not only does it impact both of those teams' playoff races, it also impacts my beloved Vancouver Whitecaps' playoff race as well. So I went with the Galaxy in Minnesota, trying to see if Minnesota can make history, become the first team to lose 4 in a row to start the season, and somehow make the playoffs. So the Loons are coming back. Adrian Heath has the bulletin board material ready to rock, and they're going to do it. So I went Minnesota Galaxy as they make playoff pushes. Josh, what is your game to watch this week?
I'm going with NYCFC against Philadelphia Union. These are two teams that we didn't really talk about much, and they've both secured playoff spots. However, this is seeding. This is all for seeding here at the end. Philadelphia has a chance to end up as the second seed. As we discussed, Nashville's in the fight for that as well. And then NYCFC are in the fight to get a home playoff game. And that has big implications on Atlanta United, who's also fighting to get a home playoff game, pending their result against Cincinnati. So my eyes are going to be on, well, a lot of games. But at least in the East, I'll be also looking at NYCFC and Philadelphia and seeing what ends up with those two teams, where they end up, where everything shakes out, really.
And I will finish us off continuing in the East with Montreal versus Orlando. We talked quite a bit about Montreal and Orlando's potential playoff hopes and how much that rests on this game. So I was very close to, I had Galaxy versus Minnesota initially, but I decided to switch to Montreal-Orlando because I think that game is bigger, and we'll see whether or not my prediction of Montreal being a good team comes true. But we'll finish us off with Josh's favorite part of the podcast, the MLS Fantasy Update. Going into the last weekend.
Enjoy the movie, Josh. I'll see you later.
Enjoy the movie. It is, well, close between two of us, less close between one of us, who is promptly bringing up the rear, the man who's going to a movie in an hour, or less than an hour.
It's not me. I'm not in last place.
Okay, second last place, with a grand total of 1,101.
Sounds like a lot.
It is.
If you did that in NFL fantasy, Josh, you'd be winning every week.
That would be very impressive. But Drew, you are close to me, but I've taken a bit of a lead so far. This week, I am sitting in 10th place with 1,866 points. Drew is sitting in 12th with 1,811 points. Blender Daddy's Boys sitting in between us with 1,857 points. Rounding out the top five, though, Older Goaler sitting at 2,433 points. Goat Brechet or Nelson is sitting at 2,358 points. Colorado Crapids, Curtis, sitting at 2,238 points. I read this. Goat Brechet at 2,358 points. Colorado Crapids, 2,238 points. Peachy Swagger sitting in fourth with 2,188 points. And rounding out the top five, Anelta FC with 2,173 points. Gentlemen, we will see how this unfolds during decision day. There's lots to still be decided in our fantasy league, but if nobody else has anything else they'd like to add, Josh, we'll allow you to go and get ready for your movie. And Drew, you will take us out from this very long podcast episode.
It is a normal episode.
Yes. Thank you guys so much. Josh is a little behind me, so like I heard his audio, but I didn't see him moving.
Yep, same here.
Oh, that's sad. But thanks anyway for tuning into the podcast. We really appreciate all you guys listening. As always, visit the website MLSMultiplex.com to see awesome written content our contributors are cranking out toward the end of the season as playoffs begin to happen. You can visit the website on Twitter at MLS Multiplex to see stories as they get tweeted. and follow us on Twitter. You can find Josh at Josh_Boland. Going to say that again because he gets two Twitter shout-outs today. Connor at CWG Somerville.
Unfair, I say. Unfair.
If you get any large Twitter followings, that's why. It's because we mentioned you twice. And myself at _DrewHubbard. So give us a follow on social media, visit the website, and as always, please leave reviews on the podcast. We love hearing ways of how we can improve, and we love hearing from you guys. So please leave a review, visit the website, follow us on social media, and stay tuned because we will talk to you again next week as we get ready for playoffs and as Decision Day wraps up. So exciting times in MLS Multiplex history. So be sure to tune in next week as we get ready for the postseason.
Thank you for listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast. Check out all of the contributors' written work at MLSMultiplex.com.